Every year at this time, I can see it happening all over town. The tremors, the sweating, the wide-eyed looks, the craziness. You pull up next to somebody at a stoplight, you look over at them, they look at you. Yeah, I can see it in your eyes. You're dying, man. You're dying for Steelers training camp. And it's right around the corner. And David Moyo has a few things to say about it. So we sat down with him, and he let us in on a little bit of his knowledge. And let's just get this party started. Okay. All right, so we know training camp is right around the corner.
Right.
And, you know, we don't really have to talk about the big Steelers news of the year. Of course, was AB and what a jackass he was. And also Le'Veon Bell. So
yeah.
They're gone. They're history. Okay. So you've got Ben. He's still here. You know, you've got is Tomlin now officially on the hot seat? You know what? One of the big questions I've always had, and living in Pittsburgh as long as I've lived here, you know, Bill Cowher is now a legend, of course, because he basically turned the franchise around.
Yeah.
From a few rough years when they didn't want to let go of Chuck Knoll, with good reason.
Right.
But, you know, then he kind of exits quickly, probably before his time.
Yeah, I would agree.
And they bring in this young guy in Mike Tomlin.
Right.
And we know Pittsburgh is a tough sell because you've only had really two coaches that have been successful.
Right.
And two coaches for the last 40 plus years.
Yeah.
But he takes that team and he wins a couple Super Bowls, right?
Was it one, two? One. He won one and lost one.
Right. He goes to a couple Super Bowls. So when does it officially become his team?
Yeah. And of course, you know, the Pittsburgh battle cry for the Tomlin haters is, you know, he won with Kyrie's players.
Right.
That's their battle cry. And first of all, they weren't Cowher's players. They were Pittsburgh Steelers. So, yeah, he took over. But he doesn't coach like Bill Cowher, anything like Bill Cowher. So stop with that. Stop with the he won with Cowher's players stuff. They were a different team under Tomlin. They played differently. They had a different philosophy. Defense, maybe pretty much the same because you had the same defensive coach in place. And that philosophy stayed pretty much the same, but there were differences.
But that still wasn't Cowher. That was
correct.
That was right.
And he made different decisions than Cowher would have made. He coached the team differently. So I think very quickly Tomlin put his stamp on the Steelers. And I think this is Tomlin's team. And I think that's the danger Tomlin faces now, is that this is his team. And he is billed as this defensive guru. And the defense has not been good for a number of years. So when does Mike Tomlin stand up and say, the foolishness is over. We're going to have this kind of an identity, whatever that might be. And this is the kind of football team we're going to be. Sometimes I feel like the Steelers are trying to figure out who they are, especially defensively, where they're not sure, can we play man coverage or not? Should we play more zone? Should we blitz these guys? Should Bud Dupree play on this side or even be in the NFL? No.
Right.
You know, who are we as a defense? So now they've kind of pinned some hopes on Devin Bush. Okay,
right.
this excellent first-round draft pick, but how many downs has he played in the NFL? We've played as many. So how can you put everything on this kid in the middle of your defense?
I think the Steelers are really, not just the organization, but I think in this case, you know, we were talking about the Pirates before. In this case, it's really an incredible phenomenon. You're talking about the identity of an entire region.
Right.
So I really think that sometimes in all the years that I've watched the Steelers, I think sometimes the organization and the fans and even the players, when they become part of the organization, they search for the person that's going to be the next Mean Joe Green,
yeah,
or the next Polamalu,
right,
or the next What was his name? LeVon Kirkland, whoever, sure. or Rod Woodson, the identity of that defense has become.
Yeah.
They look for that. And mm-hmm. and to me, they've been looking so hard for that since Polamalu. Really, when Polamalu started to slow down his last couple years.
Yeah, I agree.
They started looking for the next Polamalu.
Yeah, and I think they felt like Ryan Shazier was that player.
You know, and he probably was.
He probably was, yeah. And, Shazier was this dynamic talent. But he still had warts too. You know, there were still some things that Shazier couldn't quite do. And a lot of it's because of his size.
Well, he was also he was a young player too.
Yes, I mean, correct.
The tragedy is we will most likely never get to find out.
And I do think Shazier was on a major upswing and at a point where he was ready to emerge as really one of the elite linebackers in the NFL. I think he had basically figured out the game. You could see his instincts were better. His reaction time to things was better. His big play penchant was very good. And I do think that was a serious blow to the identity of that defense. And I think they are hoping that a guy like Bush might step in and sort of take that role and run with it and reestablish this. We are a fearsome defense. And if you want it against us, you're going to earn it every single down.
And I think that's a fatal flaw.
Yeah.
And that's a fatal flaw based on an incredible run and an incredible organization. Yeah. But unfortunately, when you bring up things like that, like consistency, you have to bring up teams like the Patriots.
Yeah.
Who can you name the last star they had on defense?
No,
you can't. I mean, Aqib Talib.
Yeah.
And then that idiot who caught the interception to win the Super Bowl. Yeah, I don't even remember that guy's
name.
Sure,
of course. And that's the point is that, we talked about the Pirates, how you really can't miss. I think in the NFL, you really can't miss either. You know, you can't sign guys like Mike Mitchell and expect them to step in and be impact players. He never was an impact player. Why would he suddenly become one? You can't sign a guy like Morgan Burnett and expect him to step in and have any real role in that defense. He had trouble getting on the field his whole career. Why would he suddenly be healthy and productive? He is who he is. Jordan Lyles is who he is. Morgan Burnett is who he is. So I think for the Steelers, if you want to rebuild that defense, maybe you got to look closely at the reputation of these guys you're signing, which brings me to Steven Nelson, this cornerback who played in Kansas City last year. And a lot of people pick on him because his analytics are bad. So just like I think analytics are poisoning the minds of a lot of baseball people, I think maybe football, you got to be careful. Steven Nelson was also the most targeted cornerback in the NFL last year. So he led the league in pass breakups. That's a pretty good stat. He wasn't that bad. He really wasn't that bad. Yeah, he got beat in the AFC Championship game. Tom Brady's beaten a lot of cornerbacks.
Right.
Come on, give the guy a break.
Yeah.
I don't think he's that bad of a player. And if that's a hit, that could shore up a lot of problems because their secondary is kind of a mess. It's kind of a train wreck at times. When Joe Hayden's your best player in your secondary, you're in trouble. Hayden's a decent ball player, but the Joe Hayden's a superstar days are long gone.
Yeah.
And he's a good ball player. I like him. I have no problem with him, but don't tell me he's like going to be the shutdown corner. He's not. Look at the stats against him last year. He was at times very easy to throw on. They need two corners who aren't so easy to throw on all the time. They need safeties who are a little bit more ball hawkish than the ones they have. And, I think that's going to be a big challenge for the Steelers. And this is where Tomlin is supposed to shine. And he's a secondary coach. He knows what to do with the Tampa 2 defense, all this Tomlin legacy that he came here with. Well, let's see it now. It's time to stand up and be Mike Tomlin. Be that defensive guru if that's who you are.
So do you think that once again, this is all going to fall? Because it seems to me like the last couple of years, it's really fallen on Ben's shoulders.
Yeah.
That he's had to carry the team.
Yeah.
And for the most part, you can talk about,
you know, the receiver stats, and you can talk about the running back, you know, who I won't name anymore, but Ben's a guy that's got to hand him the ball. Ben's a guy that's got to throw the ball. Ben's a guy that's got to avoid the pass rush if the blocking is breaking down.
Call the check downs.
Yeah,
call the
Ben's
audibles.
Also the guy who, even though he's huge, is wearing down. He's been injured a lot.
Right.
You know, he's
and he's older.
Yeah, and he's older. So it seems to me like once again the question is going to be, can Ben Roethlisberger have a career year? Because you know they're going to have to put up points.
Yeah.
Unless somebody, I find it highly unlikely that Devin, is it Devin Bush or Mike?
Yeah, it's Devin Bush. Mm-hmm.
I find it highly unlikely that Devin Bush is going to step on the field and be anywhere close to an elite NFL linebacker.
Right.
Because it just doesn't happen that way.
Not often.
Unless you're Lawrence Taylor.
Or Ray Lewis.
Lewis.
I hate to say that name out loud like that, but you can't deny him as a great football player.
Right. It takes, you know, the game has to slow down.
Yeah.
And that's where your acumen comes in. Where have you studied the playbook?
Right.
You know, because you can memorize every play, but if you can't react and you can't recognize you're going to be a mediocre player.
You know, what if this guy doesn't do what the film showed you he's going to do?
Right, right. What if
he
goes the other way? Because they design plays that way.
Of course.
So I think it's all going to fall on Ben's shoulders. And I think even though he seems to shine in these cases, and as his career has evolved, he's become more of a passing quarterback.
Right.
I think this year he's got a problem because you can't, you know, his receiving core to me is kind of like the Redskins receiving corps.
Yeah.
You got a lot of guys there that have, they show flashes of potential.
Right.
And they're obviously NFL receivers.
Right.
But what the hell have they done?
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, it goes back to the, you know, this guy is who he is. And, you know, will some of these players take that next step and develop? That's a good question. And certainly, you know, there's only so much Ben can do. I think the Steelers, you know, have worked hard to build an offensive line that can protect him and that can really run block very well. And that's in place. That's pretty much intact. You know, the right tackle position might be interesting to watch this year. But I think for the most part, the Steelers are pretty set there. So then you start to look at those skill positions and wonder, can Vance McDonald maybe step up and be better than he was? Can James Washington take the next step and be a legitimate NFL receiver? Any of the guys they drafted, are they going to come through? The signings, the offseason signings. To me, the biggest question is, can Juju be a number one receiver?
Yeah. I mean, now he's going to be drawing all the double coverage.
Yeah.
And that's really he's bigger.
Yeah.
He's pretty damn fast.
Yeah.
He's got great hands.
Yeah.
And he's got, so far, I mean, what I can't stand about the NFL right now is when, and this is kind of a tangent, but when a guy like Juju shows up for any team,
mm-hmm.
for those first couple years, they have all the heart in the world.
Yeah.
And then they get paid.
Yeah. That's right.
And you have to pray. Yeah. That heart, that desire stays there. What is that heart for? Is it for the money or is it for the game? And neither you nor I are ever going to experience that. But I'd like to think that at least in my case, that I know I'm going to get paid if I keep playing, if I keep playing with the heart, and I want the ring and I want the trophy and the money's going to come.
Yeah. And as much as Pittsburghers hate him now, that was AB when he was younger. Before he got paid, he was all heart. And then he got paid and he was still all heart. And for a long time, AB, it was just will and desire and commitment. And you're not going to beat me. I'm going to beat you. No, it doesn't matter what I have to do. I'm going to beat you. Was he the best teammate? You know, all that. Who cares right now? He's old news, in my opinion. Juju's now got to step up and prove himself as a number one and the receiver who could come through in those tough moments. You know, I think about last year and I think about the New Orleans game, which I think was the lost opportunity. Everybody talks about Oakland and Denver and you should have beaten those teams and those were lost opportunities, but you had the New Orleans game in your hands. You had the lead late and Juju fumbled it away.
Yeah.
And that was a big moment for that kid. And at a very crucial time, he fumbled the game away. And I kind of looked at that and thought, is this what we're going to see out of Juju in big moments? Are we going to see him sort of fold like a cheap tent? Or is he someone who can maybe learn and grow from that? Because everybody makes I remember a game in Dallas years ago where Antonio Brown fumbled a punt return in a crucial part of the game. And they ended up losing the football game. Dallas took over at midfield, drove and scored, and the Steelers lost the game. But AB rebounded from that. Will Juju rebound from that? Or is it just going to be, whatever, I fumbled, no big deal.
Yeah, yeah. I don't, just looking at him, I think that he rebounds from that.
Yeah, and I'm very hopeful he will. Yeah, we'll find out.
That, because you could tell, that anybody's going to, it's going to break their heart, but you could tell from his reaction after that happened,
certainly,
that it just totally,
it
almost destroyed him.
Yes,
yeah.
It devastated
here we
him.
Are about to,
yeah.
Our season is about to be renewed.
Yeah.
And here we go. We're going to beat the Saints. And he coughs at, I remember that.
And play. I appreciate the catharsis, but I'd appreciate holding on to the football.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I understand. As people make fun of the kicker all the time, but how many games were on Boswell's foot one way or another where he missed a kick at a certain part of the game and that comes back to bite them and they lose a game by a couple of points where the kick would have been the measure of difference. Can he rebound? They've withheld the bonus for him until the end of August, sort of putting some, we're testing you in training camp. We'll see. They've got a lot of unanswered questions. James Conner, can he stay healthy? Can he produce all year?
Yeah.
Can he have good games in big games against good teams where he seemed to disappear at times last year? All those questions need to be answered.
Yeah, I think it's going to be an interesting year. This year for the Steelers, I think, has the potential of being either a great year or a terrible year.
Yeah,
I don't really see an in-between.
I can actually see that. I can see them either falling apart because none of these pieces sort of fit together, or somehow it meshes and they can ignore the Bud Dupree dilemma and be a good team. I think Bud Dupree's a real problem. Even though they defend him to the end of the day.
Well, he was a high draft
pick. When one of your guys on the field basically does nothing, you're playing defense with 10 guys. And that worries me a little bit. I'm pretty worried about that particular position. But we'll see what happens.
No conversation about football in Pittsburgh is complete without some thoughts on the University of Pittsburgh and Panthers football. That's next. We'll hear more after a short break. So, of course, every year it seems like we start the year thinking that maybe this is the year that Pitt turns it around and actually has a good season.
Right.
Ever since I've lived in Pittsburgh, it's pretty much been the case.
Yeah.
I think they're trying to get Dan Marino to come back to school for a graduate degree and see if they can spin the rules to make him eligible. Because as far as I'm concerned, ever since I've lived here, there hasn't been a quarterback in the Pitt system who's been anywhere close to being a quarterback.
Right. Yeah.
Unless I'm missing somebody.
No, they've had a couple of decent players, but nobody of that ilk, nobody who can be an elite player in a program to the point where you're a national championship contender, which they were with Dan Marino. Right now with Kenny Pickett, he threw for 8 yards in a game.
I know.
8 yards in a game against Clemson. Come on.
Oh, well, it was Clemson.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. It was Clemson.
Yeah.
I challenge you to throw for 8 yards.
Clemson. I won't.
Yeah.
I won't. I'll admit that. I won't complete a pass against Clemson. But when you are the Coastal Division champion, you should be able to at least represent a little better than 8 yards in a game.
I don't even know how they became the Coastal Division. I don't even understand that there's a Coastal Division. I don't know why Pittsburgh is in a division called the Coastal Division.
That's a good point.
Are we talking about like Put-in Bay?
Yeah. You know? It's like when the Atlanta Braves were in the National League West.
Yeah.
You know, it's wait a minute. This doesn't jive. You know, with Pitt football, you're looking at a year where the expectations will be higher because, well, they were the division champions.
What was their record?
So their record was 6-5.
6-5.
You know,
okay, well, it was a winning record.
Yeah, but then you lose the game to Clemson, you lose your bowl game, and now you're a 500 team, maybe a little worse. You know, Pitt's not a real contender for anything. Let's just be honest about it. They're not. They don't recruit at a level that gets them the kind of player that the big-time schools get. So when Penn State rolls in here and turns my stomach with a 51-6 win or whatever the score was, you kind of look at it and go, well, you know, they get the players and we don't.
Well, why has Pitt become that? Well, that wasn't the case in the 70s, in the early 80s.
No, and the recruiting game was a much different thing. So now it's turned into this sort of reputation thing where, you know, a kid sees, well, Clemson's great. Clemson's great. I want to go to Clemson. And when a player, a five-star kind of player, is coming out of high school, these big-time coaches, big-time programs are doing everything to land that player. So if I'm in that situation and I've got Pitt knocking on my door and I've got maybe Ohio State knocking on my door, well, Pitt, you have cool uniforms, but you know what? That's Ohio State. And if my goal is to play in the NFL, whether it's a pipe dream or not, I'm going to go to the school that I think gives me the best chance to get there. The funny thing about that is the large number of NFL players Pitt has produced over the years.
Right.
But that aside, Pitt doesn't have that reputation as a serious football school anymore where they're going to contend for a national championship. You're going to be on ESPN this number of times a year. You're going to be in the national spotlight. You know, I think that that's a fallacy for a lot of these kids because they're going to be behind guys that are much better than them in a lot of cases. Where at Pitt, you might be able to get on the field reasonably young and really show off something.
But maybe that's one of the reasons that so many players end up NFL ready.
Yeah, from Pitt. And that's quite possible. But you know, Pitt's just in a tough situation there, where they are geographically. There are a lot of schools right around them that are bigger programs with more to offer. Again, Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, Michigan State. These kinds of schools are more appealing to that top level elite athlete.
Notre Dame.
Yeah. Of course, the appeal of Notre Dame. So those schools are going to out recruit Pitt consistently. They win the Coastal because they're in the Coastal with Virginia and Syracuse. And, you know, these schools are, you know, they're on the same level as Pitt when it comes to recruiting. Duke, who's going to go to Duke to play football? That's worth anything.
Right.
Yeah, they might get a good player here and there, but come on. You go to Duke to play basketball. You go to North Carolina to play basketball.
What do you go to Pitt for?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's...
There's the dilemma.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think this year's recruiting class, ironically, might be Narduzzi's strongest, the one he just had. But now we're, you know, are we going to wait 4 years to see how that turns out? Do we give him 4 more years?
Is this the last year of his
contract? To see this or the next.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's a bad guy. I don't think he's a bad coach. I just... You know, I think it comes down to recruiting and your players, and that's big time college athletics now. And Pitt just doesn't have the players really to compete at that level. But can they win the Coastal again? Sure. Why not? Why not? I mean, they're as good as anybody else in the Coastal, but what's that saying?
Nothing.
It's like saying, you know, you're the best prison league team.
Right.
So
I hope they're not listening.
Right. Yeah, me too. And if you are, I'm
especially the kids.
Seriously, I really am joking.
He's not. No. All right. So basically we can look for more of the same from Pitt this year.
I think so. Yeah. I think you're going to see a team with a, you know, a mediocre record. One of the most startling statistics, I think, in sports is that Pitt, since 1983, has not lost fewer than three games in a season. They've had at least three losses every single year. So they're as mediocre as it gets. And they'll have those couple of games where they pit. Games that they probably should have won, that they, you know, they pulled defeat from the jaws of victory. They do that a couple of times
that
a year.
That seems to be a running cliche right now.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah, the last 10 years at least.
That's right.
So basically what you're saying is that we most likely won't have this mediocre conversation again.
No chance at all that this, I mean, it's good that this is being recorded, because then we can just sort of,
we can replay,
repackage
it.
And
next
replay.
Year.
Yeah. Yeah. And we'll have the exact same conversation.
All right. Perfect.
Yep.
So it's time to wash your Bettis jersey, clean off that terrible towel, throw the Steelers magnet and flag on your car, and get ready for some football, because training camp is just a few short days away. If you have any comments or any questions for Dave, you can leave a message for us right on the podcast, or you can email us at pittsburghbeautiful@gmail.com, or hit us up on the Facebook page, on Instagram, and we'll try to get to those as soon as we can. Thanks again for listening to Pittsburgh Beautiful. Stay real. The Pittsburgh Beautiful podcast is produced by me, Chris Klein, the founder of Pittsburgh Beautiful. The opinions of our guests are not necessarily the opinions of Pittsburgh Beautiful and are their own opinions. All of our guests have been invited to be on the podcast and are not paid for their appearance. Thanks for listening to the Pittsburgh Beautiful podcast. Stay real.